You're listening to the Broadway Belters podcast, where we sit down with some of Broadway's brightest stars to learn more about their journey behind the scenes. Hello, and welcome back to the Broadway Belters podcast. I am your host, Nick Ferreo, and joining me today is Andrew Norlin, the genius behind When the Lights Are Bright Again. This book immortalizes the stories, struggles, and success of an industry that was the first to be shut down due to the COVID-19 pandemic and one of the last to return. Welcome, Andrew. I'm so delighted to be chatting with you today about this very exciting project.
Thanks for having me. So excited to be here.
Good morning. Thanks for joining me. Before we get into the details of everything, I would just love if you could tell our listeners more about you and who you are as an artist and, you know, how you found your way into this whole theater thing growing up, your backstory a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the SparkNotes version of that would be, as a little kid, I tried every sport under the sun, and because I couldn't be really good at them immediately, I quit them. So, I eventually found there was this like summer camp happening, and a woman from our church encouraged my mom. She's like, I think Andrew would really love this. So I played Alfalfa in a week-long production of Little Rascals. And that kind of like set sail for everything I wanted to do. At the end of that week, I met Catherine Zeman, who is a longtime friend. She actually will be here because she's coming to New York for the book launch. She has a letter in the book. She always says that she's like, I discovered Andrew. That's our joke together. But she now is she was a performer. She like grew up here. She grew up in upstate New York and was a teenager in the 60s here in New York. Her stories are wild. But she's an amazing human, and she at the end of the week like reached out to my parents and was like, hey, here's my card. I on the side volunteer and direct shows at this local children's theater. I think your son's really special and I think he should get involved. So I auditioned. My first show was A Christmas Carol that winter, and that was when I was 10 or 11. And then by the time I graduated high school and I was 18, I did 35 shows with that children's theater.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, totally changed my life. So then by the time I was like a freshman in high school, I think I knew I wanted to pursue theater as a career. I started looking for colleges. I ended up going to Boston Conservatory for my BFA in Massachusetts. And then I moved to the city 5 years ago. And it's been a steam engine ever since that I'm very, very thankful for to have been sort of steadily employed. But oddly enough, to connect it back to the book, the way I connected first with Matthew Murphy was he shot our closing company of Kinky Boots on tour. And post graduation and post school, I don't think I ever, you know, we spend all of school being told, dance like a man, sing like a man, be grounded, all of that. And I could do all of those things, but never in a million years did I know that my like calling card into the business was going to be first doing Priscilla at Algonquin Playhouse, and then doing Priscilla in the desert on a cruise ship for a year, and then all of these things just leading to Kinky Boots. So I am so grateful for just saying yes to things and trusting that there was a bigger plan than maybe what I've been told was the correct way to do the plan, you know?
Yeah, I love that. When, you know, jumping back to, I guess, almost 2 years ago now, when the whole shutdown happened, where were you at in your career? What were you doing? And then what was your next move? Did you leave the city? What happened there for you?
When COVID started and happened here, I was in New York 3 weeks before the shutdown, before the whatever that was, the 12th or 13th of March. I had just gotten an agent for the first time. 4 days before the shutdown, I had the biggest audition I've ever had. So just it was those moments of feeling like I was on the precipice of like all the, you know, like even if that job was or wasn't mine, it was just that moment of being like, I feel like what my hard work has been paying off. I feel like I'm in the right place at the right time. And I've always had a really love-hate relationship with the city. I think in my own grief and my own things happening in my personal life when I first moved to the city, I think I've always been itching to leave. I think sometimes in school, especially, we're kind of taught that. I think sometimes we're taught like, do whatever you can to get work, say yes to everything. And I have now finally learned that that's just not sustainable. And yeah. I'm okay with being, I think picky is the wrong word, but I think, I really believe like what is for you will not pass you. And mm-hmm. I think that, when I let go of my own need to control things, I think I realized that the business kind of has a way of creating space for you, where you don't expect it. But yeah, to answer your question, sorry. I love to ramble, just so everybody listening knows. I'm so sorry. The shutdown happened. I got COVID 2 weeks after that. I had the like fatigue and the chills and all of that, like really intensely for like 5 days. Then it went away. Then I had the like loss of taste and smell, which was so weird. Yeah. I remember being like, this can't be what I have. And then I remember putting chicken salad, salsa, coffee grounds, and something else on the counter, peanut butter, and smelling all of them, and they all smelled the same. And I was like, fuck.
Yes. Anyway.
So yeah, that was March of last year. So I was in the city. My best friend Mimi came and stayed with me up in my apartment at that time for a few weeks. Then we both then I left. And I remember 2 weeks before I left that the airports were crazy. And then when I left and I went home, that was the 24th or 25th, right before my birthday of March. And I remember when I left, like JFK was a desert. There was like 7 people on my flight. Like it felt like the apocalypse.
Wow. So you went home and you're from Oregon, right?
Yes.
And that's where you were quarantining. What was that like for you? Was it refreshing at first? Because like you said, you have this love-hate relationship with the city and you have always wanted to get out. So did it feel, was it a breath of fresh air in the beginning? And when did it start to feel like, oh, wow, this is going to be longer than I anticipated? What's going on? When did that start to settle in, I guess?
Yeah, I think at first, I am such a family man, and I like my sister is my best friend. She has 2 little ones. So like this gift of time to be able to be with my niece and nephew was huge. And she said to me like halfway through 2020, she was like, this is so special because I don't think you ever would have gotten Marley at that time was 2, my niece. And my sister was like, I don't think you ever would have gotten this much time for her to like get to know who you are and not be like so desensitized and like, who is Uncle Dude that's like always on FaceTime in this phone? Like now she knows who I am and it's really special. And so I wouldn't trade that for the world. At first it was like, oh, we're like being given this time. I mean, there was so much we were going through at that time politically as a country. I feel like those first many months in terms of like my extended family or like seeing like things that like family friends were posting on Facebook and just seeing like just like the never ending like sort of spending every day like educating people was something that I think was so exhausting but so needed and important. I think I definitely had, as I think we all did, and if you didn't, I don't know, I think you had to have been living under a rock during spring of 2020. I think we've been through this like grand reckoning as a society and as a country, and not just as a business of the theater community. I think it's bigger than that. And I mean, it's also just shown like how much of a like microcosm on a small level that our business is like very similarly shaped and based off of what the macro of what our country is. It's very problematic.
Yeah.
We don't need to go into that. I had to take myself out of it and not be like, oh my gosh, why is this happening to me? And I had to step back and realize, Andrew, you're home. You have an opportunity right now to have important, healthy discussions, whether they are hard or not, with your extended family, with your grandparents, with your parents, of waking people up and bringing sort of trying to enlighten them. And it's not that I felt that I needed to like, that I needed to teach them something. I was learning things too. I was teaching myself these things along with them. But I think that there's just, our generation brings a different perspective to things. I live in a very, very diverse city here in New York, comparatively to my little small town that I would definitely call Trump country.
Yeah.
So So that was, it was hard. It was very hard, but I had to get over myself. I had to get over myself and lean into those conversations and realize that, like, for the people I love, that don't live in Oregon, and the community that I've gotten to know in my community of the theater community, it is my job to speak up for them. Yeah. And to stand in the void in those moments, when ignorance is being said out loud in my presence of, mm-hmm. of like people that I know and love. Like, I kept saying all year long, and I wrote a lot about this of my own writing. Like, I think we have to, I kept saying to my parents, like, I'm so done with the phrase from other people in our family of like, oh, we just don't talk about that. I'm like, yeah. We're abandoning that. There's never anything we're not talking about anymore. I'm over it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Totally. Totally. So when did this time of, initiating conversations and self-reflection and all that lead, you know, give this idea of this book to you? How did that come to be in your mind? And what was that like for you?
Yeah. The first word that comes to mind is confronting. It was about 6 months in, 6 months and 7 months in from moving back. It was this time last year. It was the fall, and I had just really hit a wall creatively. It all came to a head the way I remember it. It all came to a head at dinner one night with my parents in my childhood home, and was so when I creatively, I said this to my boyfriend the other day. I am my best when I'm creating, and I had just really hit this wall while I was home, and I realized that I wasn't singing anymore. My mom actually realized that about 2 weeks before this. She was like, why aren't you like singing in the shower and singing around the house anymore? Like, I let that muscle go. I wasn't taking dance class online anymore. I wasn't reaching out to my chosen family and my friends back in the city, because I knew that every conversation was inevitably going to lead to this shared grief we all were going through of what we were missing. Yeah. And it was just overwhelming. And like the frustration and the fear of even having those conversations was insurmountable to witness for myself. And I didn't want to talk about it. I felt like I was drowning in student debt that I'm going to be paying off till the day I die. I was like, I'm so jealous of all my friends that like have a significant other and a partner that they're going through this time of COVID with them, and like jealousy for that, and then like not liking myself because I was feeling jealous, and like being like, Andrew, you're being ridiculous. So there was definitely like self-awareness within all of it, but it didn't make it any easier. Sure. And then so this breakdown happens, feeling all those feels that I just described, saying all of that in like this word vomit explosion monologue to my family. And then on top of that, it just was this like perspective of being like, who am I to be feeling all of these things? There's literally people in our community and in our world and our country dying every day from this virus. I have a roof over my head. I have food on my table. I'm safe. Who am I to my privilege to be like even complaining for a second? Now, granted, it is all relative, and we have to be able to give ourselves space to feel those things and feel every edge of them, and then pick ourselves up and move forward.
Yeah. But,
had that conversation with my parents, and then the next morning I went to the gym to sweat it out and to get over myself to try. I was FaceTiming. I was on the elliptical, and I was FaceTiming one of my best friends, McKenna, who I grew up with in theater too. And I basically was giving her the rundown and the Spark Notes version of the argument, not argument, I shouldn't say that, of the mental breakdown I had the night before. Mm-hmm. And she stopped me and she's like, Andrew, have you thought about writing about this? And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like annoyed. and she's like, well, you write about everything else. Have you thought about like writing this down? She goes, what if you wrote a letter to the business about what you miss, like as a way to grieve? And I was I stood up taller. I was, I don't know where that came from. And I still I give this to her. Like, I'm so excited to send her copy. Like,
wow.
She's just someone that has always been my heart and soul. And she said, you know, like when we write an email that we're never going to send, but just, and she kind of called me on my bullshit in a way.
Okay.
Like, she was like, you write about everything else to let go of things in your life. Why have you not turned to the thing that you're so good at for this? And I was like, oh, you're right. So we hung up. And when I tell you, my sister calls me an idea man, because when I have an idea that I think is like
amazing. I do not sleep until it's accomplished, which is probably unhealthy.
Let's be honest. So I could not get, I could not shake this feeling. It was like pulsating through my body, and I could not let go of how I was feeling and how excited I was about this idea and the spark she had sort of given me. And it was truly like, I say, like, it's like she gave me a permission slip to take up space again. It's like she gave me a permission slip to lean into my discomfort and to create inside of my discomfort instead of feeling paralyzed by what I was feeling.
Totally.
So for the next 2 or 3 days, I did not sleep, and I just like was writing down title ideas. And then I was like, oh, like, and then we could do this. And like, I think I was clearly in my Aries controlling passionate nature. I was putting the cart before the horse. I'm always like that. But the moment I sort of honed it in, the one thing that would equip me for these 2 or 3 days was this title. And I just like, I had this list, but like the thing, every time I said, when the lights are bright again, I like got these like effervescent goosebumps through my body. And I was like, that's it. Like, I just knew. And it was a feeling it's really hard to explain. But the thing that kept me going was like, I kept having this feeling of like, if I do this right, this is going to change my life. And I now realize that feeling was, this is not going to change my life for my benefit. This is going to change my life to wake me up to doing what I believe I'm on the earth to do, which is bring people together. Mm-hmm. And I, like, when I tell you that the process of making this has been easily, what, number one, the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And number two, the most incredible needed ego check I've ever had. And it has humbled me every day. And I have said to my team the whole time that the book is in charge, and that is truly the thing that keeps me going. Because every single time that I get out of my own way, and every time that I let go of like the way I feel or think that something should become for the book, or something we should do for press, or something, all of these things, because all that stuff has to happen, and I have to lean into the why. And that's been really important to me. Like, as I've sat down to do these interviews and stuff, it's like, you can get lost in the producing, and you can get, and I think that's a bigger comment and metaphor for like what creating and what art is. Like, you can't forget why you originally did it. And that comes from like I had that idea, and then I started creating this project, and I didn't write my letter for 6 months.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
I didn't write my letter when McKenna gave me that permission. I immediately went to like creation mode. But when I look back now, I like kind of lost myself in the idea of this like big grand idea. But then when I sat down to write the letter, it came out of me immediately. Barely had to edit it. Like, it's exactly what I wanted to say. And so I know that it happened in the right time. But
wow.
But yeah, that has been a really complicated journey and a wild journey that blows my mind that we now even have this like physical thing that was just this like idea in my head that I never really knew what it would look like. But I have to be honest, when I had that idea, I knew that it was going to be a physical book. Like, wow. I literally felt in my bones. I was like, I don't know what this looks like. I don't know how I have to ask people to help me with this. But there was something so deep inside of me that was like, next year or whenever, we didn't know at that time, who knows, everyone thought Broadway was going to wait to open until January 2022, but here we are. There was something deep inside of me that was like, this is going to be something physical, and I'm not going to stop until it is.
Wow. So what was I'm curious, what was your recruiting process and team building process once you decided like, I cannot do this alone, I need this is getting bigger than what I had anticipated it being. I need help. When did that happen? When did you realize, oh my God, this is beyond just my two hands? And then how did you go about finding the people to help support you on this journey?
I'm trying to think. Okay, so I had the idea. I launched it. I the first thing I did was I was like, okay, so like the only way I can make this happen is from the community. So the first thing I did was I reached out to friends, and I made the original like launch video that I launched in fall of 2020 around the election. So in hindsight, we have learned that that was a mistake, because I was like, I don't know why, but again, like I said, with ideas and stuff, like I'm always like, oh, this is a great day to do this. So I remember I was like, we're going to do this. I'm going to launch this video. I have this all created. I reached out to friends in the Broadway community, friends that weren't, and wanted to make that sort of this picture of people that were involved in things to help me create this original launch video of like, I have this idea, submit your letter here, blah, blah, blah. So I do that. I have the video. I'm determined to like release it on Monday, November 9th. But like, if you remember, we still didn't have a president by that day. Like, it took an entire week. And like, yes, that's where everybody's focus was. Now, rightfully mm-hmm. so. So like, right. again, back to the whole ego check thing. Like, I remember, I am not kidding. Like, the thought passed my mind of like, and the fact that this, like, just so selfish, so white privilege of me. The thought actually passed my mind, and I'm ashamed to admit it, of me being like, I've worked so hard for this video to come out. Why do we still not have a president? Like, who the fuck am I? Like, disgusting. I can't.
We were all living in our own bubbles at the time. You know, it was hard to see outside of the four walls.
Exactly. And I was like, come on, we know it's going to be Joe Biden. Can I just release this video now?
I need this video out now.
Right. Just so, like, that's like the definition of being like in your own world with creating things. Right. That was lesson one learned. That happened. The video came out. People were excited about it. A few letters trickled in here and there. And then I'm not kidding you. The next thing I did after that was I partnered with Actors Fund. So that was a partnership from the get-go and having them on board, which was really exciting. I reached out. Douglas Ramirez, who's amazing at Actors Fund, has been my contact there the whole time. We had an amazing conversation on the phone. I sort of pitched the book to him and what my idea was. And he like interrupted me. I will never forget this day. And he stopped me and he was like, Andrew, I have to stop you and I have to interrupt you. I'm so sorry. I'm wiping tears from my eyes because I have heard a lot of ideas this whole summer of ideas of ways people want to help our fund. And he's like, I've heard nothing like this. This is really special. Oh, and wow. That is what has kept me going. Like that conversation with that man that I still have never met in person, but have talked to easily probably once a week for a year or more, has been the thing that has kept my light burning when I'm like, I'm way in over my head. Who am I to make this? You know, all of the fear and the doubt we all have.
Yep.
When we're creating something from the ground up. And so that connection to Doug and him saying this is something really special has been the thing that has kept me going. At the beginning, I always knew I wanted to dedicate the book to Nick Cordero because of just what he now represents in our community and what he represents from this year and Amanda and Elvis's tenacity and ability and desire to choose happiness and choose living over fear and wallowing away. And all of those things and those feelings are important. But I think what she has done for her son, what she's done for her family, and what she's done for her late husband is absolutely incredible. And absolutely. So there was no doubt in my mind that that is who I wanted to dedicate the book to. So then fast forward to months and months passed. Everyone's attention was on like making things and doing cabarets and stuff. Christmas season virtually, all this stuff was happening. And I kind of like had to lean. That was the first step of like, I had to lean into like letting go. I was like, if this, I kept saying to myself, like, if this is supposed to become what it's going to become, the community has to find it. I have to stop pushing it so much.
Okay.
So I let go. I was working on other things. I was working on this thing I was doing with my family back home. I was working on my own writing more, editing, hired an editor to work on my own memoir that I've been writing for 6 years. And so I was sort of in that world. And then I really like am thankful to, in my opinion, it really was Stephanie Bisnette, Brittany Conigotti, and Amanda Lamott who sort of found it. They like I think one of them or their mom or something had like an alarm written on their phone of being like, reminder that letter to self for that submission thing for that book that guy is making is due in 3 or 4 days. Like one of them, somebody had something, and then it sort of like caught on like wildfire. And then in 24 hours, I remember waking up one day since we're behind on the West Coast, and like my email, like in 24 hours, like 50 new letters were submitted. And I was like,
oh, wow.
I just like, it just gave me chills just saying it out loud just now. Wow. It was very special. And I was like, wait, maybe this is going to work. Like it just gave me new encouragement. And it was another reminder of like, the book is in charge. I am not.
Right.
At that point, it was just the letters. I kept saying over and over again to my family as I had this idea and people were submitting and I was like excited about it. I kept saying I wanted to be a coffee table book. And my sister was like, Andrew, shut up. She's like, if it's going to be a coffee table book, you have to have photography. Like, what are you talking about? If it's just words. That's not a coffee table book. And I was like, you're right. And so she's like, right. Great. So who's taking the photos and what is your idea for the photography? And then I was like, oh. So I gave it some thought. And the original ask was I reached out to Matt because of our connection from Kinky Boots and from tour. And I remember reaching out to him. It was either over an email or, yes, it was over an email. I think I didn't do it on Instagram DMs. Oh, I reached out over an email and I was like, Matt, I have this crazy idea. I don't know if you're interested. And the original ask was if he wanted to. That was right after he had done that amazing series with people inside the Al Hirschfeld from Moulin Rouge, like this photo series he had done. And so, yeah, I've had this idea since last November, but Matt has not come onto the project until March of this year. And then it was really like full steam ahead. And when I asked him, he, as he puts it so beautifully, when people ask him about it, he says, like, my ask came into his inbox at the perfect time, because at that time we both had planned on self-publishing it. There was no idea of us having global distribution and having being picked up by a publisher. And he said, it just came into my inbox. And he's like, I haven't worked on a project like that. I haven't done a big original series for something in a really long time. And he's like, I think if you would have asked me 2 weeks before that or a month later, I would have said no. And he was like, it was perfect timing of like what I needed. And he kind of jumped in. I remember him on email saying, I don't really know. But he said this to me later, sorry, when we were after our first photo shoot. He said, Andrew, I've been having people ask me like what this is and what my involvement is. And I kind of am telling them, I don't know, but me and Andrew are figuring that out. And I was like, that's a good answer. And so it was just like, we were like making it up as we went.
Yeah.
And fast forward to when, which I love this, tying it back to what the question you asked me before of like my background. So very long story short, I had this feeling when I was home in Oregon that it was just time. Like my body was telling me earlier this year, 2021, that it was time to come back to New York. It was just time. And so I moved in with my friend, good friend Mitchell, who I went on tour with Kinky with, and I just knew. Fast forward to like, I love interior design. I do that as a side hustle. And I was like making a house a home and like finally feeling like settled in the city. Everybody was still kind of quarantining. The city slowly coming back in the spring. And I was making my house a home and I put this coffee table book out that's called, if anybody is familiar with these that's listening, is called the Broadway Playbill Yearbook. They don't make them anymore, but they used to make these all the time. They're very cool. Yes. They would publish them every year. And it would just show like all the cast and crew and show like whoever's in all the shows that time that year, like a yearbook. Very, very cool. I was given this by Catherine, who I mentioned before, who's like the reason that I perform, who's in the book too. I was given this as a gift when I graduated high school from Catherine, because it was the Broadway Playbill Yearbook from that year. And she wrote this beautiful message inside it, the front of the book, saying, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you and what you're about to go do at Boston Conservatory. I'm so proud that you're chasing your dreams. Like you're the one that's like doing the thing that everybody always says they're going to do. And it has stayed with me. So that book is published by Applause, which is my publisher. And if I did not move back to New York when I felt my body telling me I needed to move back in March and start making my house a home and put that coffee table book that was a gift when I was 18 years old on my coffee table book here in the city this spring, and then turn it over one day because I was curious of who published this and see that it was Applause TV and Cinema Books, and then reach out to their info@email, and that's all that happened. And I was going about my to-do list. I sent that thing 20 minutes later. I got an email from a man named John, who's the head of the company, from his email. And I was like, who's this? And he goes, Andrew, I just saw your pitch video for the book trailer we had at that point. Uh-huh. And he said, this is really intriguing to me. Can I call you right now? And I was like, what is happening?
Oh my gosh.
And I said, yes. He called me. We talked on the phone for an hour. I was late to work that day. I didn't even care because that was the day that like this person, again, the book was in charge. I am not. This person bought into the magic that is this book.
Yeah.
And I am not that magic. I am just a conduit for it. And he was like, he was asking me all these questions. He's like, how far along are you guys? Like, do you have a designer? And like, let me tell you, when I was like shitting myself, I was losing my mind, because at this point, when you were talking on the phone, I have now done, me and Matt, I'm not taking pictures, Matt, sorry, has done two photo shoots, y'all. Two. There's 50 brand new photo, 50 people, subjects in the book, over 100 photos. That conversation was on May 4th of this spring. He goes, okay. He goes, so do you have a designer? And I was like, well, no. And then he goes, okay, so what's your timeline? And I was like, well, I said, now that, and at that point was when they had just announced that Broadway is returning, yes, on September 14th.
Yes.
So now our timeline has been like given to us on a silver platter, right? Because like the timeline, I'm sorry, we can't publish a book called When the Lights Are Bright Again 6 months after the lights have been bright. It makes no sense. So I'm like having full anxiety, because I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is so meant to be. Like, it's that feeling of like, okay, here's this gatekeeper, right? In this business I don't understand, that can give me opportunity, that can make this thing go to the next level. And so I'm panicking. However, what I should have now in hindsight been doing is being like, if this is supposed to work out, it will.
Right.
And now I know that it did, because he was like, okay. He's like, just going to be honest with you, Andrew, like you're in the 11th and a half hour. And he's like, most of our publications that are coming out this November were bought by us last November. And he goes, I have a thing that's coming out this November around the same time, because he threw out the date of November 1st, which now is our publication date next week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. And I was like, I think we could get that done. And he goes, but I got to be honest with you, like, how much do you have done? And at that point, I hadn't even hired a designer. We'd done two photo shoots and had this grand plan, because we were just on our own timeline. Wow. And we had just scratched the surface of Broadway saying that they were deciding when they were coming back.
Right.
So he gave it to me straight and was like, this is what you need to get done. And we hung up. And in 3 days' time after that conversation with him, I hired a publicist. I hired a designer who has made the most beautiful book in the world. And I'm so grateful to her. And it's just, Aisha is just the most amazing, kind woman. And has gone above and beyond for this project. Hired her, and she made some mock-ups. I reached out to them. I didn't hear anything. And basically, it felt like he ghosted me for almost 2.5 weeks. And so, like, in my mind, I'm remembering him saying, like, we're on this crazy timeline, right? But we're all, like, getting our shit together during this time. He comes back. I'm having a meeting on the street at UT 47 on 47th Street outside with Aisha, with this designer, because she's a New York local, telling her about all of our plans about how we're going to self-publish, and telling her about like how excited I was that this guy from Applause reached out to me, and how I haven't heard from him, and how he's ghosted me for 3 weeks. I am not kidding. I go to the bathroom in a store across the street. I come back. I sit down with Aisha, and my email thing goes off, and it's John from Applause being like, these designed pages are amazing. But again, it's like the moment of like, wow, the book is in charge. Like, I'm sitting, yes, with the designer planning how expensive it's going to be for us to self-publish the book.
Yes.
And I get an email from him saying, we're really interested in this. Can you get me this, this, and this in the next 24 hours? And I'm going to pitch it to get the green light from our project to put this in as a what's called a drop-in title. And he's like, and we want to do a 50-50 partnership with you instead of a traditional book deal, so that you guys can make more money per copy for the Actors Fund. And I was like,
wow,
what is happening? And it was just, again, it was just absolutely magical. And I can't describe it in any other way. And I just know that, for lack of a better term, I shouldn't say magical. It was meant to be. It was meant, yes, to be what it's become. And mm-hmm. it was meant to be because it's bigger than me. Which is what I have to remind myself about.
Mm.
And so, so then I think, again, I had to get my shit together, and I got, like, he saw that we had done the work since the last time we talked, and he was very impressed. And so then in 5 weeks' time, Matt did photo shoots every single Saturday for four weeks. He did like 3 or 4 shoots privately with people. At that time, Elizabeth Stanley was pregnant, but nobody knew. Okay. So he did that photo shoot with her, which there are beautiful photos in the book. But we did between 10 to 15 people in one day, every single Saturday for a month. And,
oh, wow.
Because they were like, okay, if we're going to do this, you need to give us a finished book, edited, finished. Like, we had to do all of that by July 1st. We were told that like, I think that conversation happened, like, the second to last, like, the very, very, very end of May. So we had 1 month to create what people are going to hold in a week. And it was so daunting. But for some reason, I was like, I just know that we're going to accomplish this. It was amazing. Yeah. And yeah, I can't describe it as any other way, but the book was just leading the charge. So that's sort of the very long-winded explanation of how the journey to what was created and like how all the people got involved. It's just a very special journey.
What was it like being in those photography sessions in the studio? Because that is so, I would imagine that was a lot of people's first time being back in a shared space again with other artists. And I would guess that was probably an emotional experience for some. Can you just talk about that, you know, chapter of this whole process a little bit?
Sure. I love that question. The first thing I want to say is, Matt Murphy has just the most incredible way of working. He's so warm. He's so inviting. He's so down to earth. Like, it feels like you are just like kikiing with your best friend while you're getting your pictures taken. It was really important to him. Like, and he always does that of like people coming in, like having a playlist prepared that like would inform the mood of how they're wanting the pictures to be taken. So.
Oh, wow.
That was a really amazing experience. So, like, a few of the things that pop out to me, because me and him have recently talked about this, of, like, to just share on his behalf some of his favorite moments behind the camera. One of the first that pops into my mind is Rob McClure. That's the other thing, is this experience was, like, a lot of these people were Matt reconnecting with people he shot before, friends of his, but this was me, like, connecting with these people for the first time, and then being like, hi, Andrew, who are you? Rob McClure's really sticks out because he came in with the most incredible playlist that was just so informative. It was truly a masterclass. That man is a masterclass in not only in performing, but more importantly in just like in humaning, if that's a word. We're making it a word today.
Yeah, yeah.
He is so kind. He is so giving. He is so transparent. He is so freaking hilarious. And he is just the way that he works and the nature with which he gives, like, his energy as a human is just giving back to the person in front of him is bananas to watch. And the fact that was the first time I was meeting him, but like he had these songs and then the song would come on and I would like watch his demeanor change, but it didn't feel like he was putting it on. Like, it was so genuine, and it was just the most amazing. It was just amazing to witness.
Wow.
I loved working, watching Cameron Adams with Birdie, with her dog. Her dog is in her pictures. It was so sweet. Oh my God. Irene Gandy, who is a Broadway press agent, who just got an honorary Tony this year. I just have to like find them in here because they're just absolutely gag worthy. Her pictures were bananas. She came in, she was like, I don't do this. I'm always like behind the camera. I've never done this before. And Matt always says, his favorite thing to say is like, he always goes, he's like, me as a photographer, I know that if someone tells me that, they're going to be the best subject. The person that's like so like nonchalant, and then they're like amazing behind the camera. She comes in and she's like, I don't do this. Like, I'm just really anxious, blah, blah, blah. He goes, what music do you want to put on? She goes, play Bitch Better Have My Money.
That's amazing.
She just delivers the most gag-worthy. She didn't wear any other outfit but this. Oh, microphone, sorry. And she's
my God.
An icon. Like,
yes.
Are you dead?
That's amazing. And she wrote a letter, right?
Yes, I'll read it. It's so, dear Irene, please. When the lights are bright again, I will take my working on Broadway over 50 years behind the scenes as an African-American press agent, producer, more seriously, and realize the commitment I must have to all of my theatrical community and friends, and will be any means necessary keep hope alive. When the lights are bright again, there go I, Irene.
Oh, I love that. Wow.
It's just,
that's awesome.
That's the beauty of the book. It's like some people's letters are incredibly long, and some people's letters, it's like, It is a snapshot of what they wanted to contribute and how they were feeling that day when they sat down to write their letter in that moment. And it's such a picture of, like, the book is to me a physicalization and a reminder of, like, you are exactly where you are supposed to be in any given moment.
Totally.
You do not need to judge yourself based off of somebody else's moment in their career. Let us create an industry moving forward that doesn't look the way it did before. Let's abandon the hustle and let's embrace celebrating and elevating each other when everybody's in their own season of having an amazing moment and trusting deeply that our moment will come. But while also reminding ourselves as privileged white men that it is our job along that road when we're in those moments to be mentioning those people in those rooms and to be bringing up and asking questions and elevating the most marginalized person in the room and giving them the space that they haven't had before, because that is how we change things. That is how it is about us listening. Like, to me, this, if there's one word for me to describe, like, what this book has been as a gift to my life, it's like, is for me when I'm getting anxious, is to stop, to read this and to listen to other people for me to learn and get over myself.
Wow. And what a unique experience. I was just thinking about this early this morning. Like, it just hit me. You had all these portals into all these people's individual lives at this moment, you know, when the letters were coming your way, that at least for me, it was like, oh, this letter will be, you know, this is honestly how I'm feeling, but maybe I don't know if I want to tell everyone right now, but eventually I'll be fine to share those feelings. And what an interesting and unique experience to get a glimpse into everyone's experience during this traumatic and once in a lifetime, hopefully, chapter, I guess. Was it a lot to kind of when those letters were coming your way? Did it weigh on you heavily? Did it reaffirm that you were doing the right thing? What was that like, I guess? I don't know. I'm just so curious what you were feeling when you were reading everyone's letters coming your way.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I won't lie. It's exactly what you just described. It was a lot. But I think I mentioned before, like, the reminder I had to keep within me is, like, if I needed to desensitize is the wrong word. I needed to remind myself that I am creating space for other people and that I don't need to absorb what it is that they're going through. I need to take it in, but I think that I don't think I would have been able to keep putting one foot in front of the other if I would have, like, taken on the weight of, because let me tell you, some of this stuff in this book is not easy to read. It's not going to be easy to read for the individual that wrote it when they read it again, because they're going to be, when people, that's what people have already been telling me, people that have gotten their books already have said, like, I'm crying reading this letter because I'm in such a different place. But, like, what a gift that is. But what I love about the book is that while the person that wrote the letter is in a different place because we all grow, the beauty of the book is that someone is going to find that letter and it's going to resonate with them right now when the book lands in their lap. And that specific letter, I that's what kept me going and kept me thinking about the project in a bigger way that was bigger than me and didn't allow me, like you're asking, like, to drown in the weight of each person's letter. Because I had to keep reminding myself, like, this is this person's experience now. And just like my own letter that I wrote, and just like for you and your letter that you contributed, this is my experience now. It's really hard for me to face this, but I have to remind myself that, like, the beauty of this book is that in 10 years from now, when someone buys this or finds this or asks their parent because it's on their bookshelf and reads, they're going to find one person's letter. And it's going to be that moment of, like, for me, it's that moment of thinking about it, like, Mimi Scardula wrote her letter so that 10 years from now, this one individual can read her letter and feel seen and heard by exactly what she's going through in that one moment of time. And that is exactly why Mimi wrote her letter and no other reason.
Yeah.
And it's that feeling and knowing that in my gut 200 plus times over for every person's letter. And like that to me, going back to what I said before, is like, that's the magic of it. And that is how I have kept myself from not being overwhelmed. I said to somebody last week, I was like, I am so excited to like put a face to all of these names. I feel like I have been looking at, because I have, I've been looking at all these people's names and more so Instagram handles for a year. Yeah. And like, I'm excited for this launch party to be like, oh my gosh, you're like at 642 John.
Right, right. To come back, you know, to bring it back to reality off the screen and into in person and live. Yeah. Wow. My last question, you have kind of already touched on this, but, and you said, you know, this experience has humbled you and that, but what do you, besides that, what have you learned throughout this process? Whether it's about yourself, whether it's about how the industry operates, whether it's about, you know, looking at artists in a different way, what are one or a few of the biggest lessons that you will hold and cherish from this whole process?
So many things. How much time do you have?
Whatever, you know, I don't know. Maybe one of the, or it could just be right now, what the lesson that you're focused on and thinking about in this moment in your life.
Actually, this might be very weird, but this will help me like think of things. Do you care if I read a part of my letter from the book to answer
that? If you want to read your letter, I would love for you to read your letter.
Dear Andrew, when the lights are bright again, the fear you feel right now will be also a mere fragment in history. Your journey to writing this letter to yourself for yourself is the perfectly broken picture of the grief you've been darting and dodging away from. When the virus came, you were forced to face the viruses in your own backyard, your own tribe, your own industry, your own family. It was a confrontation that you could not fix, mend, or bandage with your usual hustle, smile, or big ideas. There wasn't an answer this time. It was time for you to listen, to learn, to unlearn, to elevate, to educate, and to speak up. When days turned into weeks, your mind began to wander and warn your soul to prepare for a bumpy ride. When weeks turned into months, you found solace in helping others make their house a home, but inside you wondered when you might have a home again yourself. When months turned into seasons, you packed your life away into a box, locked the door, and turned your back toward a paused dream you feared might never be revived. When seasons became a year, your body realized it had learned everything it could inside of memories and past and family. It was time to be alone again, to be uncomfortable again, to change again, to grow again, to be brave again. I learned these affirmations. I am not my job, but my job is a job. I am whole just by waking up in the morning. I am worthy of greatness, but greatness that is defined by me. I am responsible to wield my privilege for good, for kindness, and for humanity. I am beyond lucky to bring others joy for a living. That is a gift. I am enough, no matter who I am with, what I do, or how much money is in my name. I am on this earth to make others feel seen and proud of themselves, but I cannot do that until I feel the same way about the man in my own mirror. When the lights are bright again, when is the hope? The knowing inside all of us that our industry is way too strong to be extinguished forever. The lights are the people, an industry built on the immediacy of a moment, a shared experience that is transient, effervescent, cathartic, and once in a lifetime magic. Bright is everyone we've lost. We have been dimmed in reality and we have been dimmed in spirit. We honor those who never again get to share their bright lights with our community. The magic is that their impact is immortal. And again represents that the lights were once bright before this time. But when we do return, we must return differently. We must learn from every uncomfortable conversation we have had. We must fight for equity, fight for the hard conversations, fight for the representation, fight for the equal pay, and fight for the marginalized. What we were doing before this was not working, before the virus came. But the lesson it leaves behind is that when you don't confront the virus in your own heart, your own job, your own family, your own industry, the virus will confront you. I promise. When the lights are bright again, just pause. Relish in the moment you are having right now. Reading your own words in a letter, inside a book
filled to the spine with love and passion and loss and grief and anger and hope. Always hope. You did this. No. We did this. The lights could not be bright again without the we. Be proud of this moment, Andrew. Give yourself the permission slip to indulge for 5 or 10 minutes, and then get back to the work. The work is where we create to find the answers we won't ever fully comprehend. We can do hard things. Be well, be kind, and be brave. Andrew.
That's beautiful. A little emotional.
Yes.
It's, and thank you for creating this opportunity for to allow people to have this emotional and cathartic and to get it out. You know, it's, you can have the conversations with yourself, but to put it on paper, I think is a different, it's a whole different level of that. So yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, when you're listening to this episode, friends, this book is out, it's released, it's available. Where can they go to purchase When the Lights Are Bright Again?
Yes, you can find it on Amazon. You can check out our Instagram at When the Lights Are Bright Again. You can go to our website, whenthelightsarebrightagain.com. Check out your local bookstore. If it's not there, call your local bookstore, your library, and ask them if they're going to carry it. That would be amazing and super helpful to me.
Yes.
And to the book, its longevity on the shelves. But yes, and just don't forget, every time you purchase a copy of this, a portion of the profits will go to the Actors Fund to help the incredible work that their organization and their fund does to support our entire community always. And so that the Actors Fund is a huge heartbeat of our community. And that is what I am most excited about.
Is absolutely
our stories giving back to our community in a big, big way.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me and chatting more about this. I'm so excited. I cannot wait for this book to be in people's hands and for people to find it 100 years from now. And who knows what other dreams that may inspire them. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, friend. Hey, Broadway Belters listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, you can help us out by subscribing and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also follow us on Instagram at BUA Belters Podcast. And if you're feeling extra supportive, go ahead and share today's episode with a friend. The Broadway Belters Podcast was produced today by me, Nick Ferreo. Thank you for listening.